using the term just dispatcher almost excludes those who are 911 call takers. There's no one answer. There's no one solution. It starts with, where is that person at? People first. The education of what we do on this side of the headset, not everyone knows. Training is the business of empowerment. It's one of the best things you can do. There's so many career paths in public safety, period. Even the calls that have a bad outcome, you can hang up that phone, take a deep breath, walk away, and come back and say, hey, I know I did everything I could.
Welcome to Respond to Resilience, along with my co-host, Bonnie Rumley, LCSW EMT. I'm David Dashinger. On this episode, we'll be speaking with Samantha Hawkins, PSAP professional and trainer at Motivations Incorporated, about returning empathy and compassion to training and leadership to positively impact retention in the 911 dispatch industry. We'll also discuss the importance of training 911 trainers to care about the individuals they are empowering beneath the headset. And with the influx of neurodivergent individuals in this profession, I'd love to find out what that means. How important is it to make training more human-centric and interpersonal? We invite you to like and subscribe. Our YouTube channel is Responder Resilience, Facebook, Responder Wellness Inc., and Responder TV, PBSRadio.com, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, all the podcast platforms, and check out our website, ResponderTV.com, for past episodes and guest information. We'll be right back to speak with Samantha after this.
In this family, more of us die by our own hands than by the hazards of the job. In this family, up to a quarter of 911 dispatchers have symptoms of PTSD. In this family, our mental health and wellness are in crisis while responders are quietly suffering. In this family, many struggle with job-related stress, burnout, trauma, sleep disruption, substance abuse, and marriage problems. In this family, we can help the helpers with vital information and resources, resilience strategies, and success stories of overcoming the obstacles. In this family, no one is alone. Welcome to Responder Resilience with co-hosts retired Lieutenant David Dashinger, Dr. Stacy Raymond, and Bonnie Rumley, LCSW EMTB.
Today we're joined by Samantha Hawkins, PSAP professional and trainer with Motivations Incorporated. A little bit about Samantha. Her career in emergency communications began in 2015, and since then she has taught regionally and nationally on topics ranging from effective customer service skills in 911 to leadership development, and that's quite an important topic right there. She is a PSAP professional and trainer with Motivation Incorporated, a company that delivers crucial support services to communication centers all over the country, and she is a traveling dispatcher as part of their Dispatch on Demand program. Her passion is training newer generations of emergency telecommunicators to be both purpose and mission driven, and equipping them for a long, effective career beneath the headset. Sam, welcome to Respond to Resilience.
Thank you so much, David, Bonnie. It is an absolute honor. I love this program, and what I especially love, obviously being someone who came from beneath the headset, is how you do take the time to honor and take care of all the responders, including the first responders, who I'm, of course, very biased towards, our amazing headset heroes.
Absolutely. Well, I love that, headset heroes. Just offline, we were talking about all the different names or terms or kind of job titles that encompass what you do. Can you just give us a little overview on what you think is kind of the most appropriate way of looking at a 911 telecommunicator?
Oh, yes. Yeah. So it's actually amazing, because this happens to be very much in sync with the conversation that's going on now. We have just had it reintroduced that we're trying to be reclassified on the federal level as who we are, we should be a part of protective services occupations, because that's what we do, rather than clerical and administrative, which is what we're seeing on the federal level. And part of that conversation over the years has always been, it absolutely, we have to be across the board consistent in how we identify ourselves or how others see us and identify us. So for example, you know, using the term just dispatcher almost excludes those who are 911 call takers. And it almost makes, you know, brings up the, I'm not a dispatcher, I'm just a call taker. Mm-hmm. We don't like that just a phrase preceding any position in this profession. So terms like 911 telecommunicator, 911 professional covers the basis, basically, of who we are, what we do, whatever phase you're in, whether you are a call taker dedicated to that or a dispatcher or some other professional on the administrative forefront that's supporting 911.
I love the distinction that you're making because I think we've even made the mistake by saying dispatchers or dispatch in an attempt to be inclusive. Maybe we're being a little bit exclusive. So I really appreciate we're constantly learning from our guests, which is why you're here. So thank you really for explaining that. You know, we've talked to a lot of guests and there are a lot of things coming up in regards to staffing shortages, burnout, PTSI, retention issues. We're seeing it with people who are on the road and under the headset. So could you talk a little bit about your thoughts on all of those topics, which may take a while?
We don't have enough time. We really don't, Bonnie. But, you know, my
I'm gonna try.
We'll try, right? We'll So my career in public safety began in 2015. And you probably would never, ever, ever guess this. But in 2015, we were having these conversations. There was the staffing shortages. It was the burnout. It was all of these things. And now, over 8 years later, I have since transitioned from public safety sector into a private sector role, still getting to support those who are beneath the headset. And sure enough, we're still having these conversations. There's no one answer. There's no one solution. I'm a part of an amazing company that's offering some kind of solutions, but what we realize, it's a collaborative effort from those on operations, those in our leadership positions, those in the private sector who supports, those actually doing the job, boots on the ground in public safety. There's so many things, but we do have to continue to have these conversations until we find solutions that work. And I tell you what, it's kind of like Billy Joel, you know, he said, we didn't start the fire, you know, we didn't light it, but we tried to fight it. And that's where we're at. This fire has been, it was lit many, many, many years ago. I get it. But the buck has to stop with us. And me being on the training side with things, it's so important to me that trainers, we do our part and our role in saying, how can we tackle this? How can we address it? Yes, it's been going on for years, but what can we do in our role with what we have, what we've got, passion we have, to sort of find those solutions for our people?
Our greatest asset is a thinking, knowledgeable, well-trained, physically fit, and healthy firefighter. It is the continual drive to be better, to improve, and to never be satisfied with the status quo. Success begins long before the alarm comes in or the tones go off. Success is nothing new in the FDNY. We did not suddenly wake up one day and become good at what we do. We need enthusiastic leadership and training that has a clear understanding of what's at stake. That is teamwork. That is dedication. That is well-trained firefighters ready to go to work on game day. The time to train is now, before the incident or game day.
We've all seen the leader who's tactically proficient but lacks the people skills for true inspirational leadership. Cornerstones of Leadership, on and off the fireground, discusses the soft skills necessary for success, both on and off the fireground.
I'd love to know, what does quality effective training look like when you're out there delivering it? You obviously must be influencing and training newer telecommunicators. How do you approach that versus ones who have been seasoned veterans under the headset for years? Is there a different message, or are you telling everybody pretty much, giving them the same kind of training, same kind of information?
It's a very good point. So at the baseline, it is the same. You might have heard the term, and it's probably come up in conversations you've had with 911 professionals about people-driven leadership, people first. And I love that. But I really want us to get to a point where people-driven leadership and training, we almost don't have to distinguish it. It should just be the norm. The baseline is people first. It's people. So as a trainer, whether you're addressing a room and it's on one half, you can have your seasoned, experienced professionals. On the other half, you have people who are completely new to the job. It's day zero for them, day one going into it. The point is, it starts with people. Yes, the message and how you tailor it, and that's part of what we're discussing today, will be different. But it starts with, where is that person at? People first. To me, and I tell people all the time, in every class, everything I teach, teaching trainers, aspiring, current, training is the business of empowerment. It's one of the best things you can do. There's so many career paths in public safety, period. And I appreciate our leaders and our supervisors and our managers and the directors. I've never been in a formal role of leadership. And I say hats off to them, because that's a whole nother skill set and a whole nother series of strengths. But training, that right there, it is empowering people in a way that you meet them where they're at, but you don't let them stay where they are. Even talking to a seasoned professional coming from one agency to another, and I'm sitting with them and I say, hey, I understand that you're not starting from zero. You're starting from a place of experience. I'm not going to talk down to you because I know you know the basics of the job. But we are going to go over some of the basics because we all can use a refresher. We can all have those fires fanned again. So to me, quality training is about caring about that person in front of you, meeting them where they're at on a person-to-person level. I'm no better than you. Just because I'm the trainer, I'm just as human, just as flawed, have made the same mistakes, continue to make some of the same mistakes. Meeting you where you are at, but saying, how can we not make those mistakes as often? All right, we made it yesterday. How can we not make it today? How can we not make it tomorrow? So that to me is quality effective training. And of course, as we'll get in later, I think it has a big part to play in retention in our PSAPs and communication.
Absolutely. Yeah, we need to go there. And just hearing you speak, Sam, I'm like, I really want to go to be trained. I really want to be in one of your classes, because your energy and your enthusiasm for the profession is just infectious. So I'm sure you do a wonderful job, and I'd love to experience it sometime.
Yeah, and I can't wait till we can talk a little bit more about the retention piece. So why don't we revisit that a little bit later? But, you know, I was thinking about the hierarchy, which is clear to us and a lot of our listeners, you know, in police, fire, EMS. What is the hierarchy in the 911 world on your side of things? You know, who oversees the kind of training that's being provided to telecommunicators?
Sure. So from center to center, it's very different. I came from a larger center where we did have a very, you know, well-versed, expansive hierarchy, which looked amazing. You had your CTOs, your communications training officers, who were basically dispatchers, right? They're frontline dispatchers who also train. So you have them, and then you have your training and QA coordinators. You might have your training technicians in between, and then you have your training manager, your QA and training manager, who oversees it all. And then if you have that kind of hierarchy, you might have a deputy director or some kind of director of training and education to oversee everything. But it is center from center, because there are some communication centers where we don't have that whole hierarchy. You might have trainers who are more, not necessarily formally trainers, informally. It's like, you've been here X number of years. We think you got it, so you should have enough to train others. And I've taught, you know, to those kind of trainers as well. And it's like, okay, I realize you're coming from a different place and you may have been kind of thrown into it. It's not ideal to me, because I'm one of those that believe You shouldn't be forced into it. You shouldn't be made to do it. But this is a really flexible, adaptable profession. And some centers, that's what it is. Either way, I still try to instill to them, be proud. Maybe the hierarchy is a little different. Or you might be getting the specialty pay. You might not be getting the specialty pay. But I still want you, I'm going to hype you up, because if you are still training in some capacity, bravo to you. So the hierarchy does look a little different again. So it can be quite expansive, where you have these formal roles going up from the front line all the way up to the administrative level. Or it could be just straight from a dispatcher who trains without a necessary formal title, straight to a director who basically serves as director and lead supervisor and training coordinator and wears so many hats. So it kind of varies.
Well, and then you have some police departments who their officers are the dispatchers.
And that's
true. So they do a road shift, and then they come in and they do all of the telecommunicating and the resources behind the scenes and the dispatching. So it's very interesting, because I think at first thought, it sounds simple, right? We think of calling 911 and the person answering the phone. It sounds very simple, but the more that I dive into it and learn about it, to be honest with you, I realize how complex the whole thing is and how it's different everywhere on the town level, on the state level, regionally. You know, some of these centers that you're talking about are for an entire region. Some are specific to certain cities. So it's very interesting when you look at how many different structures exist for one profession.
Oh, it certainly is. And I tell you what, on the side of our community partners and our citizens, that's why we thank them for the grace they have to sow. Because you're right, the education of what we do on this side of the headset, not everyone knows. So asking the tons of questions we have, or as you mentioned, who are you talking to? Are you talking to an actual officer who's doing the dispatching and the taking of the calls? Or are you talking to a dedicated 911 person? So it you're right. All of that on the other side of things is very important.
Well, in the intro, we mentioned this term. So neurodivergent individuals, what does that mean? And how does it relate to 911 professionals?
Absolutely. So let me go ahead and preface it with this. I am not in any way an expert on the whole spectrum of that. But thankfully, there are some coming out with education courses. I will mention Tracy Eldridge is one who's actually has a course she's already been putting out there at 911 conferences talking about it. But basically, the neurodivergent population is referred to those who brains are wired differently, whether you're on the autism spectrum, ADHD, ADD, epilepsy. These are all conditions, and there's a whole umbrella of them that encompasses it, falls under that term. Your brain is wired differently, so you think differently. Well, initially it's come up that that is important, because we realize that us meeting the needs of the callers that we serve, the citizens we serve, when we talk about diverse demographics, we're not just talking about race-wise, we're talking about as well people who think differently. But what we're realizing is this same population, a lot of them are who we're hiring. I happen to be one of them. So with that in mind, as trainers in this profession, when I say that we have to meet your trainee where they are at, how are we meeting them where they are at if they are individuals who think differently? If there's someone who just throwing flashcards at them isn't going to help them get the job and understand how to take calls, how to be an effective dispatcher, how am I actually working with my trainees, my new employees, and saying, hey, let's sit down and go together. Let me find out, how do you learn? How do I tailor it to you? It takes time. It takes grace. And it's important to me, because one of the things we say in 911 is that you can't match the energy of your caller, right? Sometimes your caller goes low and you always have to stay high. But as a trainer, you can't look at a trainee and say, don't match my energy. Well, they are going to match your energy and then some. So if you are not giving them grace and forgiveness to make mistakes, and along the way, as you find out what works for them in their training, How do they learn? And you're not doing that? You can't expect them to be a telecommunicator who down the line may ultimately become a trainer themselves who gives grace and forgiveness. They're going to match the energy of the kind of training that was poured into them. That's how we determine the kind of trainers we want, the ones we want to stay, and whether we can even keep someone, because naturally people stay in places where they feel supported and they feel seen.
When our nation and communities around the world experience catastrophes and chaos, turn to Edie Darling, Ambassador of Peace. Exuding faith, providing hope, and sharing God's love through these challenging times, she brings healing solutions and meaningful dialogue. She heals communities by building a foundation of mutual respect and trust, working collaboratively at a round table of peace. Allow Edie Darling, Ambassador of Peace, to guide the way.
Come on.
Check it.
You know, I'm thinking about my experience as a therapist, and I've worked in many different settings, you know, over my career, including schools. And there was always a stigma, and there is still a stigma, of neurodivergent population and what they're able to do, not able to do, limitations placed by society. And I love what you're saying, and I take it as a positive that someone thinks differently. Therefore, when that call comes in, that is required that someone can think out of the box differently in their own way to come up with a solution to a problem. You know, that's where I think the ticket is. And what you're saying, it makes a lot of sense. And I hope that there's a lot of hope there that people could access a job like this and feel that they are welcomed and that their skill set is going to be valued and necessary and needed in a lot of situations.
You nailed it. You absolutely nailed it. And I tell you what, we walk a fine line in that I'm not going to be one of those to say something as broadly as being neurodivergent is a superpower, because there's a lot of challenges to it. And that almost diminishes some of what people in this population we struggle with, but everything, you find that there's a skill set and there's strengths. Just like any other set of skill sets, it can be enhanced, it can be honed in on, and it can be used to really create and make them the best that they can be. So it's the same thing. Realizing that so many already in our profession maybe are not diagnosed, but it will resonate with them that, oh, yes, my brain is different. And I do think out of the box. Well, fortunately, this is a profession where thinking out of the box sometimes, thinking creatively, helps you to find out what your caller needs, find out what your officer needs, recognize, hey, I need to do something a little different. That means, again, hey, this is something we can hone in on. So how is our training adapting to that? Because we want to keep these professionals. We don't want to lose them. And in some cases, they are falling in between the cracks because they're not being seen. They're not feeling supported. They're not even given any kind of strategies or tools to say what you have and how you are and how your brain works isn't a problem. Let's take it and use it and help you to be as great as you can be in this amazing and incredible industry.
Wow. What a concept. And I think that would lead us to our next topic, which we would alluded to earlier. And that's, you know, how do we keep these valuable, you know, professionals who are an asset to the profession? How do we keep them resilient so that they're staying in the job? How do we keep them from burning out? How do we keep them growing and moving forward to be a contribution to the profession? So I guess in essence, how do we retain our valued 911 professionals and not lose them to burnout and all the other reasons that we see people leaving emergency services?
Absolutely. So I'm going to get into resilience training and all of that, but I want to go ahead and set something because I want to bring it back home as to why trainers, current trainers, aspiring trainers, any kind of training professionals, formally or informally in this industry, why we need y'all and why we said in the beginning, the buck has to stop with us. So I'm going to read straight from my phone because I want to make sure I get the stat correct. Earlier this year in 2023, there was this amazing, we all know in 911, you heard about it, probably was one of the respondents. There was a survey done thanks to NINA and its survey partner, Carbine. And in that, there were some amazing findings as part of the pulse of 911. And here's what I want to bring up. It said that less than half of the respondents felt adequately equipped to handle every incident type. Around 38% of the respondents to this survey said they felt ill-prepared to deal with an active shooter situation. Mm-hmm. Okay. We've had more active shooter and mass shootings than days of the year. And yet the survey said that around 38% of the respondents said they didn't feel like they had the training in their center to deal with that kind of situation. Mm-hmm. And here's the other one. It says 25% felt they lacked training for mental health calls. Wow. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So what I'm hearing is that here we are with a survey that within the survey and all the findings also touched on how, yes, burnout and PTSD and mental health is a critical thing and part of why we are losing people. And it also mentioned some stats that, hey, at the same time, so many of our 911 professionals and telecommunicators are not feeling equipped for some of the calls they're taking. Mm-hmm. It is a human thing that you're going to stay at a job where you feel like you're performing up to standards, where you feel like what you're doing is worthy work, meeting expectations, you are worth the while, you're worth what you do. I know that our headset heroes are worth it. David, Bonnie, you know that. But if we have people falling in between the cracks because they don't feel like they are properly trained for the calls they're taking, so they take a call and they get off and now they go, oh my gosh, did I do it right? How do I know I did it right? I don't know if I took that call and if I asked all the questions I should have because I don't even have protocols in place. I don't have standards in place. I don't even know who to ask. I don't even know who to refer to. I don't even know who would give me the time of day to go over this call with me. Hmm. Training is absolutely connected to keeping people because our folks, it will help them to stay. If they can at least take a call, and this is where resiliency comes in. It's not that we know every call has a good outcome. It's that even the calls that have a bad outcome, you can hang up that phone, take a deep breath, walk away and come back and say, hey, I know I did everything I could because I had the training. I have the mental, emotional equipment and all the tools in place that I can end my day and go to sleep at night saying, I'm sorry that call didn't have the best end that I wanted it to, mm-hmm. but I have the assurance I did what my training provided me to do. Training is tied to retention because if our people can fall back on and say, I had the proper training, they can believe in themselves and say, even in the bad outcomes, even after bad calls, I'm worth the while. I am worthy of this work. I did all I could. Resiliency is helping to instill in our people that mindset and giving them all the tools to say, to give yourself grace. We're going to equip you for that active shooter call. We're going to equip you for that hard call with a suicidal subject. We're going to equip you for those tough calls. We're not going to leave you hanging. And even if you don't get the outcome you want, you can rest assured you fell back on your training and your training did the job. At least you met the need in the moment. That to me is how it all connects. And that's what resiliency really is. Resilience training is to me.
So knowing all of that and knowing that humans are humans, right? We can do everything. And David and I both know this just from being fire and EMS in the world. You can do everything that you were supposed to do, but because you're human, you can still feel like you failed. So
yes.
I want to take this a little bit more personally, if that's okay. But
yes, please.
I want to ask you, you know, what do you do when you, as the telecommunicator, you've checked all the boxes, you've done everything, but it doesn't end well. How do you cope with that? Do you have some advice or strategies that you could offer to others listening?
You don't cope alone. That is my biggest thing. You know, I'm an introvert, okay? I have a small handful of people, but even someone like me who could, you know, for many, many years could be very resistant to asking for help. It doesn't have to come off as just a, you know, sobbing and I need help. Even if it's just, we call it holding space. And I would encourage anyone, because you will take that call.
Yeah.
And it could be more than one call. As a first responder, you will have that call. Have someone hold space with you. You could call up someone you trust, and it doesn't have to be someone in the industry. It could be someone you love and respect and trust outside. Because I'm a big believer in having people who help ground you even outside of public safety. Call them, and in that moment, not being alone might look like I just need you to be on the phone with me. I don't have the words right now, but just hang on. I tell people that all the time, rather than just coping alone. Cope in numbers. There's someone else you know who probably took a hard call as well. Mm-hmm. Even with them, sit with them and say, hey, I don't have the words right now, but... Because you're right. It is a human thing to, you can rationalize it and think in your head, yeah, I did everything right. And I asked all the questions. And we realize saying, leave it at the door doesn't work.
No.
We don't leave it at the door.
Right.
It's 2023. That didn't even, we weren't doing it back then when that phrase came out. We tried. Those who was years before me in this profession, they tried. Fire, EMS, PD, they tried. Doesn't happen. It goes home with you. Yeah. 2 a.m., you're laying in bed, and you're now recapping that whole call that you handled in your head. Just don't try to cope alone. Mm-hmm. Have that network. You know, peer support to me is a big thing. We do it already naturally. You know, some people think that having a peer support in place means I've got to go through all this. And I love structured ones, and it can be structured. But we do it all the time. We look over at someone and just take a call and you're like, you all right? You good, man? You good? It's peer support. Mm-hmm. You okay? Check in on your people, but also check in on yourself as in, again, have that person hold space. Talk it out. Talk it out. Please, I don't care how, nothing's too small. You know, some of the most triggering calls for me, it wasn't the big things. It wasn't a call about someone found hanging. I've had calls where the outcome was good, but I still remember the screams in my head.
Yep.
It was a good outcome, but days later I couldn't sleep because I just heard them saying, help me, help me, help me, help me, I'm dying.
Right.
They lived, great. But that is what I still remembered. And even in that, I realized I can't cope alone.
Right.
I had to talk to someone. Mm-hmm. I don't believe that can be stressed enough of verbally communicating or just picking up the phone, sitting with someone and saying, I don't have the words yet. I don't have the feelings. I can't even articulate my feelings. I know I'm feeling something. Mm-hmm. Hold space with me. I'll hold space with you. This to me is what peer support is. And I think it's so crucial, you know, just as much as therapy is, and that as well cannot be underestimated of actually getting, you know, the actual professional help. But within our centers, peer support that we already do really naturally, doing it regularly, doing it frequently, doing it without shame. I think it's important.
You know, when I think of all of our professions, and David and I have talked about this, but the lack of closure that we get, you know, even for us, when we've been with the patient and take them to the hospital, not always knowing what ended up happening. And I really, really particularly feel for telecommunicators in that way, because you're even less out of the closure loop than we are. And I could imagine that filling in the blanks with your own visuals, with the sounds, I would venture a really strong guess that sometimes what you conjure up is even worse than what reality was. And I really, as a therapist, feel deeply for telecommunicators for that reason.
Bonnie, you are so absolutely right. And, you know, one of the things I've realized since transitioning into my role in the private sector and getting to travel is we realize that, same boat, just a different part of the ocean, you know, going to different centers and hearing that from center to center, struggles with not getting closure. We fill in the gaps and assume the worst. That's what we do. We don't assume the best outcome. We assume person died, beheaded, brain damage, never the same. Like, this is what we're going to fill it in as. So reaching out, our supervisors, our managers, I believe our trainers, training professionals, really reach out, make those connections and talk to the people on the other side, fire EMS, PD command staff and say, hey, for our new telecommunicators, for our trainees that are taking these calls, that are dealing with this, it is so important as part of their training, as part of their growth in this industry, that they do get that closure. It's important for us seasoned ones who's been doing the job. I don't care if you've been doing it 15, 20 years. Closure is still important. But imagine how much so for someone brand new to the job that takes some call that just sounds like, oh my gosh, I can't believe I just heard this. I can't believe this just happened.
Right.
What do you think they're thinking at 2 a.m. in the morning? What do you think is going through their head? So you're right. That has to be a part of training. And to me, that's resilience training as well. Again, it's not this every call is great, hunky-dory, smiles and sunshines. It's that for the calls that may not have the best outcomes or whatever, either way, knowing how it ended, knowing the outcomes. And sometimes it did have a good outcome, but if you just expect your trainee to just move on. Yes, you got to move on, take another call, but you never help give them that closure, follow up and say, hey, by the way, you remember that call we took, you know, involving that the cat, you know, that was found underneath, you know, in the undercarriage of a vehicle. Hey, by the way, that cat lived. That cat got adopted by someone. That cat made it. And seeing the look on their face that, yes, that I know that was just one call among the many, many calls you took, the hundreds of calls you might have taken over the week. But yes, there was an outcome to this. Let me follow up. Let me close that chapter for you if I can. So you're not still thinking about the worst of the worst or just try to put it out of your head and say, oh, you know, closure is absolutely crucial. And I think that is a big part of resiliency in this profession.
Well, that's well said, Samantha. I guess the question I want to ask next is it's somewhat related. So 911 professionals take a call, maybe take a series of calls, and are, you know, they can be highly emotionally charged, stressful, dramatic calls where first responders in their role, sometimes they come back to the firehouse or they're able to go back to their cruiser, back to the ambulance, and they get a little break between calls on a busy, you know, not so busy day. But 911 professionals don't necessarily have that ability or space to just go out of the room, do something different, stretch, meditate, whatever that looks like. Do you have tools or suggestions what could be done on the job to help 911 telecommunicators to kind of reset after a particularly difficult call?
Yes. So like you said, decompressing for us looks a lot different because depending on the sender, depending on your call volume, I love, you know, the concept of taking a break and getting up, but you can't do that every single tough call. Mm-hmm. That's just next to impossible. And sometimes decompressing doesn't happen until way after your shift is over. I mentioned about the importance of having a network outside of public safety. As well, you have to have interest in hobbies and things that you love to do that has nothing to do with public safety. Mm-hmm. I am 911. We love it. We champion for it. Ricardo Martinez, you know, within the trenches, he made it popular. But he himself, a good friend of mine, he would absolutely agree with this. You can be I am 911, but 911 is not all that you are. I am a believer. Take your time off. Mm-hmm. Take that day off. Hey, take a mental break away. Don't worry about the people at the center. Love them, everything. They're going to continue holding the fort down. But you have to have those things that you love outside of the job. You know, sometimes I've heard people say things like, you know, I always did this. Years ago, I used to love to do this. I loved to ride motorcycles and something. And you'll say, do you still do it? No. When'd you stop? Well, you know, when I, you know, started this job, I'm sorry. Why did you stop? I did the same thing to myself. There were things I was one of those people when I first started, you know, probably 3 years in. I was like, man, I really used to love to do this on my weekends. And it's like, why are we not doing it? Did someone hold a gun to our head and was like, nope, how dare you have fun on your days off? You got to sit there and look at that group chat and see the work group chat and see what's going on at work. You've got to know how to detach yourself from the job. Right. Care about yourselves. And being a trainer who cares, you have to, I say, teach that and instill it to your new employees and your trainees, that you can love the profession, you can love the industry, you can love your coworkers, you can love your officers, firefighters, EMTs, whoever. Mm-hmm. But love yourself more than enough to realize at the end of the day, you are replaceable. What's not replaceable is your mental health. Right. What's not replaceable is your value, not just to the profession, right, to your family, to your friends, to this world. Mm-hmm. That is not replaceable at all. When I left my agency earlier this year to go private sector, bless them, I'd like to believe that, you know, they couldn't replace my passion, my smile, my heart, my energy. But sure enough, the duties I had got divvied up, okay? Sure. They're holding it down. They're not sitting there going, where is Sam at?
They didn't shut down the dispatch center.
They didn't shut down our departments either.
they didn't shut it down. They continued. Because the person was replaceable.
Yeah.
What's not replaceable is up here. Your heart, your health, your mind, your peace. Resilience training is, yes, you've got to decompress, and it doesn't happen in between calls, unfortunately. Sometimes it's going to happen at the end of the day. Sometimes it's going to happen on that weekend. Sometimes it's not going to happen until you get those days off. Enjoy those days off. Don't think about work. Don't look at the work chat. You don't need to see that. You can catch up when you get back in. Have those interests, have those hobbies, have those friends outside of public safety who grounds you, where you're not going to be talking SOP you know, over Chinese food and at the restaurant where you're going to be talking about everything else and catching up. To me, that is a big part is, again, you are crucial to this profession, but this profession is not all that you are.
Yes, yes. And you touched on the power of play. We were just discussing that yesterday, just how important that is for mental health as well, whatever that looks like. So, Samantha, we've covered a lot, and we so appreciate you and your passion, your enthusiasm, your depth of knowledge about all this. How can people get in touch with you out there on social media or other channels? And do you have any projects that you want us to talk about?
Sure. So I am on LinkedIn as Samantha Hawkins. You will see my picture. And I believe it does me justice pretty well enough. So I am on LinkedIn a lot. LinkedIn is my Facebook, pretty much. I pretty much have a presence, probably post way too much. But I love sharing things to hype people up, not just in, you know, in training, but definitely my headset heroes and all really first responders. So that is probably the best place. And if you're interested in, you know, the services, again, I work for an amazing company, Motivations, that's all about supporting our people and our, and the PSAPs in the communication centers. Otherwise, you can catch me at a conference near you one of these days, speaking or attending, because it fills my cup. And I guess I couldn't tear myself completely away from 911. I'm not one of those actual headset heroes. I just get to wear the headset and in a supportive capacity. But I'm private sector, but my heart's still there. So you catch me there filling my cup, networking, hugging somebody, and just again, any chance I get to reunite with my headset heroes. So,
well, thank you so much for your time today. This was really wonderful, and we can't thank you enough.
I appreciate that. Thank you all for what y'all do and your mission, and keep it up, y'all.
Thank you.
Well, that was a great conversation, and we want to remind you to like and subscribe. Our YouTube channel is Responder Resilience. We're on Facebook, Responder Wellness Inc., and Responder TV. PBSradio.com, all the podcast platforms, and go to our website, respondertv.com, for past episodes and guest information. Until the next time, stay safe, be kind to yourself, take care.